Follow The Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
A newlywed couple's honeymoon is supposed to be the happiest time of their lives. Their first chance to introduce themselves as spouses to the world, embarking on a journey of love, adventure, and discovery together. Comedian Mike Binder described honeymoons as a short period of doting between dating and dating. And for many of us, it's funny because it's true. One way to avoid the debt part, of course, is to marry a millionaire. Which is exactly what Swedish citizen Annie Duani had done in the fall of 2010. Everyone told her how lucky she was, even her wedding dress designer. But inside, she wasn't so sure. Join me now as we examine the tragic honeymoon murder of Annie Duani, a 28-year-old bride on a trip to South Africa. You'll hear how a highly controversial mystery shocked the citizens of two countries in opposite hemispheres, and how one man became the center of it all. Was he a villainous mastermind or an innocent victim? It would take four long, painful years for the courts to decide. Just be yourself. Don't worry about what everybody else thinks. You do you. We've all heard these phrases a million times, and generally, it's great advice. My favorite version comes from Dr. Seuss: be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. It's a good reminder that embracing our true selves not only brings us happiness, but also attracts the right people into our lives, people who appreciate us for who we genuinely are. But while these cliches offer some positive wisdom, they only tell half the story. Because whether you like it or not, the opinions of others can have extremely powerful effects on our lives. As the old saying goes, you're only as good as your reputation. And reputations aren't just limited to people, celebrities, or companies. Entire countries have gone to great lengths to rebrand themselves in hopes the entire world might view them differently. In 2010, the post-apartheid country of South Africa was ready to show the world its new image by hosting the single largest sporting event in the world, the FIFA World Cup. When Nelson Mandela learned they would be the host country, it's reported he wept with joy. The country wasted no expense building new infrastructure to host the tournament. But the biggest question mark for potential international travelers had to do with security. In the years before the World Cup, South Africa had experienced a dramatic increase in violent crime, averaging 50 homicides per day, near the highest in the world. Crimes like carjacking and kidnapping were also on the rise, and no city in the country was considered more dangerous than Cape Town, the second largest city in South Africa. In response to the growing concern, South Africa announced it would hire more than 40,000 new security guards around the country. The National Police Commissioner also announced a new policy instructing police to, quote, shoot to kill any armed criminals during the event. By the time the World Cup was over in July 2010, South Africa was hailed in the global press for hosting such a successful, safe, and exciting world-class event. Owen Gibson, a journalist for The Guardian, wrote that the successful World Cup will be worth its weight in gold in terms of tourism and inward investment. But just 4 months later, a tragic story would dominate the international news from South Africa. One that threatened to undermine the recent goodwill and image makeover the country had hoped for when the wife of a British millionaire was cruelly murdered during their honeymoon in Cape Town. The city of Cape Town is the oldest city in South Africa. Established by Dutch traders in the 17th century, the city's most majestic landmark, Table Mountain, became a legendary icon for explorers and sailors rounding the Cape of Good Hope. Atop this remarkably flat mountain often sits a thin layer of cloud like a tablecloth, and because of this incredible sight, it's been dubbed one of the seven natural wonders of the world. In modern times, Cape Town has become the country's preeminent tourism destination, boasting access to both luxury and adventure, perfect for honeymooners, adrenaline junkies, wildlife enthusiasts, or retirees. But like all cities, there are places that are best to be avoided. And in 2010, anyone in Cape Town would have advised visitors to avoid the township of Khayelitsha, especially at night. Khayelitsha was a densely populated, poverty-stricken, and notoriously high-crime township on the southeastern outskirts of Cape Town. Certainly not the place anyone expected to find a wealthy tourist at 11:30 at night. But that's exactly what happened to one Khayelitsha resident on August 13, 2010. Cymbeline Matakazi noticed an Indian man desperately knocking on the doors of several shacks, getting no response. The man was obviously wealthy, dressed in a designer suit, but Cymbeline could see he was distressed and asked what was wrong. With a strong British accent, 30-year-old Shriyan Dwani told Cymbeline that he and his wife had just been carjacked by armed men, and although Shriyan had been thrown out of the vehicle, his wife was still inside with the attackers. Cymbeline called police, who then escorted Shriyan back to his hotel. And almost immediately, police were dispatched throughout the townships in search of the kidnapped woman. Shriyan had planned for a classy night out with Annie, beginning at 96 Winery Road, the restaurant where they made the reservations. Because the restaurant was about 35 minutes away, Shriyan had prearranged with Zola Tongo, the taxi driver who'd driven them from the airport, to provide them with transportation. But on the way to the restaurant, the couple changed their plans. Instead of going to the Winery Road restaurant, they asked Zola Tongo to recommend something with a little more local flavor. Zola recommended the Surfside restaurant, a cheap and cheerful, down-to-earth sort of place with a dining room that sits over the ocean. If they wanted to experience Cape Town more like the locals, it was a pretty good choice. At about 10:15, Shriyan and Annie hopped into Zola's taxi, but instead of heading back to their hotel, Annie apparently told Zola she wanted to see, quote, the real Africa. So Zola suggested a place, definitely not for tourists, a place in the townships only meant for locals. As they were driving through, Zola came to an intersection when suddenly two armed men approached the vehicle and launched an attack. One of the men forcibly moved Zola into the passenger seat, taking over the steering wheel, while the other intruder climbed into the back seat, forcing Shriyan and Annie to lie down while pointing a gun at them. A short distance later, Zola was kicked out of the car and left behind as the attackers drove off with Shriyan and Annie. About 20 minutes later, Shriyan was kicked out of the vehicle as well. Minutes later, Shriyan found a local, Cymbeline Matakazi, who made the first call to police. Practically every police officer in Cape Town was now out looking for Annie. Not only was there an innocent missing woman, they all knew their city's reputation for tourism was on the line. After speaking with police, Shriyan called his father, a rich businessman in the UK, to tell him Annie had been kidnapped. Shriyan's father, in turn, called Annie's father, who lived in Sweden, Vinod Hinducha. Vinod's first instinct was a natural one, that his daughter had been kidnapped and would most likely be held for ransom, so he caught the first possible flight to Cape Town and was prepared to pay the ransom, whatever the cost. But before leaving, he told his family he'd bring Annie back. To reach South Africa, Vinod had a connecting flight through Amsterdam, where he was set to meet up with Shreyans' father, who'd be accompanying him on the journey. But before Vinod could catch his next flight, Cape Town police had already made a shocking discovery. So I heard something mind-blowing. Okay, so you know when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what Netflix actually has. Netflix actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only like 6,000 of those are available in the US. You're missing out on literally thousands of great shows, unless you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN not only offers you that fantastic security of a VPN, but it's also an app that lets you change your online location, so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. They have more than 100 different locations, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows, no matter where you live, like Friends on UK Netflix, or The Office on Canadian Netflix. And it's so easy to do. You just open the app, select the country you want, and refresh Netflix. It's that easy. And it's so fast. I can stream anything in HD without any buffering. And the best thing is, it works on any device. So stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you guys 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/madness. That's expressvpn.com/madness to get 3 extra months completely free. In the early hours of November 14th, police found Zola Tongo's stolen taxi van abandoned in Khayelitsha. Hoping to find clues as to where Annie might have been taken, they inspected the vehicle. But the van wouldn't provide a new measure of hope, only devastating finality. Lying across the back seat, covered in blood, was the body of Annie Dewani, a single gunshot wound through her neck. Shreyans and Annie's fathers had still been inside the Amsterdam airport terminal when they received the tragic news that Annie's body had been discovered. Sullen, devastated, and utterly shattered, Vinod took his seat for the unbearable 12-hour flight to be reunited with his deceased daughter. He'd promised his family he'd bring Annie back home. He never imagined his promise would mean he'd be bringing back her remains. It's perhaps every parent's dream to provide their children with a better life than the one they had growing up. And in that regard, Vinod Hinducha had done a remarkable job. Vinod had grown up in a humble home with a corrugated roof in Uganda, but in 1971, one of the most brutal dictators in African history, Idi Amin, seized power. The next year, he expelled all Asians from Uganda, giving them 90 days to leave the country, and they had to leave all their possessions behind. But at least Vinod's family had been fortunate enough to escape with their lives. Amnesty International reports that over the following 6 years, 500,000 Ugandans tragically lost their lives. Fleeing Uganda, Vinod's family found their new home in Mariestad, Sweden, a beautiful small town next to Lake Vänern, the biggest lake in the country. It was in this peaceful town the Hinduchas made a new life for themselves. A few years later, Vinod met his wife, Nilam, and soon they started a family of their own. Annie was the middle child. Her sister Amy was 5 years older, her brother Anish 6 years younger. Vinod characterizes his children's childhood as nothing short of idyllic, giving most of the credit to the town of Mariestad itself, saying, "The greatest danger any of our children ever faced was the risk of falling and grazing their knees while playing in the park. I would not change Annie's childhood in any way at all. It was a privilege to raise a family in such a place." In 1988, Vinod founded his own electrical engineering firm, which became rather successful, securing his family financially. Perhaps it was no surprise then that Annie chose to study engineering at university as well. In 2006, Annie's studies were interrupted when she took a year off school to care for her mother, who'd been diagnosed with cancer. Later, Vinod would describe his daughter as being the angel of their dreams for how compassionate and generous she'd been during that very difficult time. But Annie's dreams had always been important to her father as well. He'd saved a paper she'd written in primary school outlining her hopes for the future, which included traveling the world, marrying a nice man, and having two children. In 2009, at the age of 27, Annie believed she'd finally met the man she'd dreamed about, Shriyan Dhawani, a handsome Indian millionaire from England with an impressive pedigree. Shriyan's family owned PSP Healthcare, a UK company that provides nursing care for the elderly throughout the country, and it turned out Shriyan's family had come from the same area of India as Annie's. And like Vinod's family, Shriyan's mother had also escaped Idi Amin's reign of terror. On paper, they were a perfect match. Their wedding in the fall of 2010 was a three-day celebration that took place in Mumbai, with great expenses taken to fly out the entire extended families to attend the lavish event. But Annie's wedding was something Vinod had been setting aside money for since the day she was born. The entire wedding was organized by Annie over just 3 months of preparation. Still, she knocked it out of the park. She organized the outfits, the caterers, the hotels, the cars, the photographers, the seating chart, every small perfect detail, right down to the correct lighting. But as perfect as the wedding plans were coming together in the days leading up to the ceremony, her emotions were beginning to fray. She confided in her best friend and cousin that things between her and Shriyan hadn't been what you'd expect for a couple about to get married. Annie recounted instances where Shriyan had been controlling, asking her to account for every penny she spent. Annie even asked her cousin at one point to take her away from it all. But her cousin assumed it was just pre-wedding jitters, nothing strange about that. On the day of their wedding, Annie admitted that nothing had improved between her and Shriyan and said they were just acting to get through the ceremony. There was clearly trouble in paradise, but none of the other 300 guests at the wedding had any clue. To them, they just witnessed a perfectly suited Hindu couple tie the knot in style. The honeymoon in South Africa had been Shriyan's idea. In fact, he kept the destination a secret till the very end. The newlyweds spent their first 4 days on a safari in Kruger National Park, watching lions, elephants, hippos, and giraffes. Their next stop was Cape Town. After flying in, Shriyan flagged down a taxi, and during the 20-minute journey to their luxury hotel, Shriyan struck up a fast connection with the driver, 31-year-old Zola Tongo, a former insurance consultant who'd transitioned to a livelihood of chauffeuring tourists around the city. In fact, Shriyan had liked Zola so much that he went ahead and arranged for him to pick them up the following night to take them out to dinner. The night of the hijacking, abduction, and murder. Vinod and Shriyan's father arrived in Cape Town late at night on the same day Annie's body had been discovered. When they got to the hotel, Vinod was greeted by Shriyan, who hugged him and wept alongside him. But the next morning over breakfast, Vinod noticed Shriyan's demeanor had somewhat changed, not appearing as distraught as he might have expected. Shriyan's matter-of-fact way of handling the entire situation would become a theme over the next several days. But perhaps the most startling thing for Annie's father was when South African authorities offered them a chance to see Annie's body before it was transported to the UK for a funeral. Vinod took the sobering opportunity to share some final words with his daughter. Shriyan, on the other hand, declined to go, saying it would be too difficult for him. Fair enough, But Vinod later learned that Shreyan had spent that time getting a fresh haircut and buying himself a brand new suit. Vinod also soon learned that Shreyan had already made the funeral arrangements for Annie, leaving Vinod and the rest of her family almost entirely out of the process. But things would only deteriorate further once they got back to England, where Annie and Shreyan's families would continue butting heads. Before Annie's cremation, the women in her family undertook the solemn task of preparing her body in accordance to Hindu customs, a responsibility traditionally reserved for women when another woman has passed away. But to the amazement of Annie's family, Shreyan insisted on participating as well. When they asked Shreyan if they could have a moment alone with Annie, he firmly denied their request, saying it wasn't allowed. At the temple before her funeral, Annie's family spent 20 minutes alone with her body, saying their final goodbyes and writing letters they placed into her casket. But they were interrupted by Shreyan, who, according to Annie's sister Amy, threw nothing short of a temper tantrum, telling them they had to leave. He then went up to the casket, grabbed all the letters, and threw them on the floor, a moment that would create an irreparable divide between the two families. According to Vinod, Shreyan demanded an apology and made him beg for permission to attend his own daughter's memorial. And to make matters even worse, Shreyan forbade Annie's sister Amy for giving a speech at her memorial service. Perhaps the only solace for the Hinducha family was that they were able to carry Annie's ashes back to Sweden, where they would give her a proper send-off they all knew she deserved. Shreyan would not be invited to attend. The entire experience in England for the Hinducha family had been nothing short of devastating. But shortly before the family returned to Sweden, they heard startling news out of South Africa. Police had made 3 arrests. Things were moving quickly. After Annie's highly publicized murder, South African police were under extreme pressure to solve the case. In the wake of the World Cup, the last thing the country needed was international headlines about wealthy foreigners on honeymoon being hijacked, kidnapped, and murdered. And it would be even worse if the headlines included the word unsolved. Fortunately for police, clues to the mystery quickly began to reveal themselves. Identifiable palm prints discovered on the outside of the taxi van led detectives to a known local criminal named Olile Ingene, who was later found to be in possession of the taxi driver's cell phone. Ingene confessed to his role in the hijacking, and after a few days of interrogation, revealed the name of his accomplice, his neighbor Kwabe. Kwabe would also quickly confess to his role in the crime, as well as reveal that the entire hijacking had been arranged by Monde Bolombo, a hotel receptionist at another luxury hotel. The plot was getting thicker, but it seemed simple enough. A hotel receptionist, aware of numerous wealthy tourists in Cape Town, had tipped off 2 local criminals to carry out a hijacking. But there was a major piece missing of the puzzle. How could any of these men have known exactly where Shreyan and Annie were going to be on the night of the hijacking? They'd been attacked 30 minutes away, along a township road where no tourist in their right mind would have ever been after dark. Well, when Bolombo was arrested by police, he filled in that crucial missing piece, asserting that he'd merely acted as the middleman and had been contracted by someone to locate criminals willing to carry out the crime. And the individual he was referring to was a person police were already familiar with, the taxi driver, Zola Tongo. According to Bolombo, Zola told him that he knew a man who wanted his wife murdered, but wanted it to look like a hijacking, so Bolombo hired Ingene and Kwabe at Zola's request. On the same day as Annie's memorial in England, police arrested Zola. Once in custody, Zola confirmed everything the other co-conspirators had already told them and accepted a plea bargain. He pleaded guilty for his role in the murder in exchange for testifying truthfully about the entire conspiracy. And according to Zola, the truth was, Shreyan Dewani had hired him to arrange Annie's murder and to stage the crime scene to appear like a hijacking gone wrong. On December 7, 2010, Zola confessed to everything before a judge, making Shreyan Dewani the official primary suspect in Annie's murder. Watching the day's proceedings from his seat in the courthouse gallery was Vinod, who'd flown back to South Africa, holding a photo of Annie and feeling utterly betrayed by the man who'd been his son-in-law, even if it had been only a few weeks. Zola's confession before the judge was nothing short of sensational. According to him, this is what happened. On the same night he'd given Shreyan and Annie their first ride from the airport to the hotel, Shreyan had pulled him aside and asked him point blank if he knew how to arrange a murder. According to Zola, he'd offered to pay approximately $2,500 for the hit, which astoundingly was the going rate for such a crime. The next day, Zola and Shreyan met again to discuss the details. This is when Zola said he learned that Annie was the intended target. The fake hijacking would happen later that night. Shreyan's only responsibility was to bring the money and place it in an envelope in the pocket behind the driver's seat. While they were all together in the taxi that night, Zola claimed he'd sent Shreyan a text message to confirm he'd brought the cash. Shreyan then sent a confirmation message, and all the while, Annie sat beside Shreyan, completely unaware of the unfolding plan or the messages being exchanged. After dinner, everything went mostly according to plan. Ngena and Kwabe met Zola at the prearranged intersection in the township, where they pretended to hijack the car. All the while, Shreyan and Zola acted out their parts, pretending to be afraid, while knowing full well their lives would be spared. After entering his plea and giving his confession, Zola was sentenced to 18 years in prison, with the possibility of parole after 12 years. He would be released after serving the minimum sentence in 2002. The South African authorities have been quick to believe Zola's version of events. His version also seemed to be confirmed by CCTV footage police had gathered. Every time Zola claimed to have spoken with Shreyan, the footage corroborated the meetings had taken place, although there was no sound to confirm what they discussed. But the footage investigators found most revealing occurred after the murder, when Shreyan and Annie's father, Vinod, were sitting next to each other at the hotel. In the recorded footage, Shreyan is seen answering a phone call and immediately making his way to the lobby, clutching an envelope. The lobby camera then captures Zola entering the hotel and Shreyan walking with him to a meeting room. When they exit the room, Zola is now carrying the envelope Shreyan had been holding. Police were certain it was Zola's payment for his role in the conspiracy. Shreyan would later claim that he'd simply given Zola the money he still owed for the cab ride. Police would also claim phone records proved Zola and Shreyan had indeed exchanged messages during the time they would have been riding in the taxi with Annie. Just one more thing to corroborate Zola's account. The case against Shreyan was looking extremely damning, and on the same day Zola was sentenced, a warrant for Shreyan's arrest in England was issued by a British magistrate. Shreyan turned himself in voluntarily, kicking off a veritable war for public perception in the international press. For South Africa, the entire country seemed galvanized by the idea that Annie's murder had been orchestrated by a British foreigner and not one of their own. The country desperately wanted to distance itself from the image of a place that was a dangerous tourist destination. The New York Times was even quoted as saying, "South Africa's honor seems to be on the line." Back in England, Shreyan hired one of UK's most infamous celebrity publicists to bolster his image. But come to think of it, perhaps hiring the same publicist as O.J. Simpson wasn't the family's best idea. Because once the press turned on Shrian, they turned on him in full force. Reporters began pointing out numerous inconsistencies in the accounts he'd given to different journalists and the original statements he'd given to South African police. To police, he told them the trip into the township had been Annie's idea to see the real Africa. But to the Sun, he claimed the idea had been Zola Tongo's. In one interview, he claimed he was forced out through the car door, but in another interview, it was through the window. At first, they seemed like minor errors, but now that Shrian was a suspect, it was easy to frame these as lies. By the time the extradition hearing took place in the spring of 2011 to decide whether the British government would extradite Shrian to South Africa for trial, public sentiment had largely turned against him. And revelations that came to light during the hearings would only make things look even worse for him. The biggest bombshell of the entire proceedings came in the form of a shocking witness, a sadomasochistic male escort named the German Master. His personal website featured a photo of a large man wearing all leather, smoking a cigar, with the caption, "Are you ready for total domination?" According to the escort, his services had been enlisted by Shrian on 3 separate occasions. During one of their encounters, the German Master claimed Shrian had told him he needed to find a way out of his engagement to Annie, but feared his family would disown him if he broke it off. Vinod Hinduja would later state this revelation made his entire family feel like they'd been completely swindled by Shrian. Personally, he had no qualms about anyone regarding their sexuality, but he was heartbroken by the fact that Annie's entire engagement and relationship with Shrian had been based on a lie. By now, Annie's family had also become aware of just how much Annie had been dreading her wedding in the months prior, when her cousin and best friend revealed a series of text messages she'd gotten from Annie. One of them read, "Fighting a lot with Shrian. Told him I'm going home. Wish I never got engaged." Another said, "Hate him. I am not happy." For South African authorities, they believed Shrian's secret sexuality was the true motive behind the murder. Perhaps the most damning information South African police later discovered against Shrian in this regard was when they learned Shrian had been using a gay dating website called Gaydar while on his honeymoon. He'd visited the site less than 24 hours after Annie's body had been discovered. He would access the site again the following day and the day after that as well. The process to get Shrian extradited from the UK to South Africa would end up being an excruciating ordeal for Vinod and the rest of Annie's family. Shrian had spiraled downward into an abyss of mental health issues, including acute stress disorder. Hearing after hearing, Shrian was declared too unwell to attend. For each hearing, Vinod and other family members made the trip from Sweden to England, but time and time again, returned home, increasingly frustrated by the lack of progress. This would happen over and over and over again. After each hearing, the courts would grant Shrian more time to receive mental health treatment, with delays lasting for 4 whole years. Not once did a single court officially consider the hardships faced by the Hinduja family, traveling internationally to each hearing in support of their lost family member. Still, throughout the entire ordeal, Vinod and his family remained officially neutral in their opinion of Shrian's guilt or innocence. Not once did they badmouth him or his family to the press or claim to know he was guilty. Each time they were pressed for comment, they always said the same thing. All they wanted was for Shrian to go back to South Africa and tell the truth.
There are a lot of delays, and it's very painful for us. But we want to get the truth about what happened to our sister, Annie. And we just want him to get better now so that he can finally go to South Africa and tell us what happened We just want to know the truth, because this all is all about that our dearest little sister was murdered. And that's all. Thank you.
Finally, after waiting for what seemed like forever, Shrien was extradited back to South Africa to stand trial for murder in the fall of 2014.
I'd like to thank the British judge for his decision, which I believe is a fair one. I'm also very grateful for the many messages of sympathy from all over the world, from British people, from South Africans. And this case is not about Shrien and the three accused. It's about my beautiful daughter and me, not forgetting her. I wish Shrien a very speedy recovery from his illness, so that he can now go to Cape Town and help the police and clear his name, as he says.
By the time Shrien's trial began, the other alleged co-conspirators in the murder plot had already been through the courts. Zola Tongo received a plea deal for 18 years, Kwabe 25 years, and Ngene received life without parole. The middleman, Bolumbo, was not prosecuted in return for his cooperation. From the South African prosecutor's perspective, all they needed to do now was finish the job. But unlike the previous 4 years, Shrien's innocence or guilt would no longer be tried in the court of public opinion. In the Western Cape High Court, it was only evidence that mattered. Shrien's defense counsel opened the trial by shocking the entire courtroom. In a legally brilliant move, Shrien's defense openly admitted that Shrien was bisexual, something he'd denied in the press for years. Because of Shrien's admission, there was no longer any legal reason to introduce evidence to prove something that had already been stipulated. The German master's anticipated testimony would now be ruled inadmissible. Among other similarly salacious details, the prosecution had hoped to present. Still, the prosecution had direct testimony from Zola Tongo. It was supposed to be a slam dunk. But when Zola took the stand, his story started to fall apart under questioning. There were too many details that just didn't add up, and he began contradicting many of his earlier statements he'd given to police. His story had considerable plot holes, and much of what he said at trial simply didn't agree with the evidence or surveillance footage from the hotel. His testimony was nothing short of a train wreck and an utter embarrassment for the prosecution, who'd had 4 years to prepare their witness. For them, this was a nightmare. Zola was the only person with direct evidence that Shrien had organized the murder. Suddenly, the tables started to turn. Unlike the claims that had been made to the press, it was revealed at trial prosecutors actually had no evidence that Shrien and Zola had sent each other texts during that fateful drive. In fact, close examination of the phone records among the conspirators proved rather exculpatory for Shrien. Calls that Bolumbo and Zola testified had been made with Shrien proved never to have existed at all. Rather, the phone records showed an awful lot of communication between Zola and Bolumbo and the hitman around the time of the murder. Finally, in a rare move, the defense read the statement of a jailhouse informant, an inmate who'd been in prison with Zola. According to him, Zola had confessed to organizing the hijacking on his own, but after his arrest, realized the most likely way to avoid life behind bars was to frame Shrien. The prosecution filed for immediate dismissal of the charges, a terrifying prospect for the Nduchi family, which was expressed through Annie's brother, Anish.
So my message is simple. Don't let Shrien Devani walk away without giving us, South Africa, and the people from all over the world, the full story. I, as a brother, fully expect the South African trial against Shrien Devani to continue on the 8th of December and for his application for discharge to be rejected. It would be a terrible development in what has been a four-year wait if we and the people of South Africa are not afforded the full story. Shri Ndavani has insisted all along that he wants to clear his name, and he has told the court through his lawyer since the trial began dozens of times that he would help the court with his own version of events. The phrase "my client will say" or "my client will tell the court" has become like a mantra to the judge, to the media, and to the members who has been at the Western Cape Court. Well, let's have him tell it then. This has been his pledge throughout the trial, and it would be wrong for him to walk away from South Africa without explaining himself what happened on the night when my sister got murdered in this country.
Despite the family's heartfelt pleas, midway through trial, the judge decided to throw out the entire case, citing a complete lack of evidence.
In my view, the evidence presented in this case falls far below this threshold.
Shrien was released immediately. He was now a free man. After 4 long years of being one of the most reviled men in 2 countries, Shrien was exonerated. The victim of a murderer's attempt to lighten his sentence, and the victim of prosecutors who appeared more worried about their country's reputation than finding the truth based on evidence. For Vinod and the rest of Annie's family, the result could not have been more devastating.
Today, we feel really, really sad because we never heard the full story of Shrien. We heard that Shrien has led a double life and that Annie knew nothing about it. And we just wish that Shrien had been honest with us and especially with Annie. The knowledge of not ever knowing what happened to my dearest little sister on the 13th of November 2010. That's gonna haunt me, my family, my brother, my parents, for the rest of our lives.
In the years following Shrien's exoneration for murder, Shrien has moved on with his life and as of 2018 was in an openly gay relationship with a Brazilian photographer. Annie's uncle stated to the press, years after the trial, that the family accepts the fact Shrien did not murder Annie, but still believes Shrien owes the family an apology for living a secret double life behind Annie's back and lying to her entire family. He claims that Shrien has refused to make time to sit down and speak with them about any of it. In 2018, Vinod Hinducha published a book detailing the entire saga from his family's point of view. It's a heartbreaking account detailing the pain of being virtually disregarded by the justice systems in 2 separate countries. But throughout it all, the love, support, and unfailing strength of the Hinducha family is impossible to deny. When it comes to Shrien, Vinod declares that if he had been honest with Annie, she would have walked away and never met her death in South Africa. He concluded his book with a message for Annie. "Oh Annie, I miss you so much, my beloved angel. I know you are looking down on us. One day, I believe, you will come back to us, one way or another. All I can do until then is to remember you for the bubbly, smiling, exciting, creative, passionate, selfless, and honest person you were. One day, we will be together again. Rest in peace, my beloved daughter, Annie." Follow The Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.